Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent.
Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Barrel-Law.com. I'm Tani Alvarez, your host from Barrel, and today our guest is James Stinkle, Executive Director of the Kennebec Regional Development Authority, First Park, in Oakland, Maine. And today we're discussing why location matters in DEI initiatives. Jim, thank you so much for being with us today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. I'm glad to be with you and to speak with your audience.
Jim, you and I have spoken in the past, and you have a really interesting background. Can you tell our listeners a little bit more about yourself, who you are, your background, and how you got kind of here in the executive director position for First Park?
First of all, people always ask about my accent and I always joke that I'm from southern Maine. I was born and grew up in central Kentucky, the area around Lexington, Kentucky. And I went to the University of Kentucky to college. I was sort of a legacy there. My grandparents had attended UK, and so I followed in that tradition. I came to Maine. I took kind of an odd route getting here by way of Arizona. I lived in Arizona for 8 years prior to this. Now, when we have a nor'easter like we've had in recent days, I always ask, why in the world did you leave Arizona? But no, seriously, I love the quality of life here. We spent 8 happy years out there, but I did miss the change of seasons, as people often say they do. And, even though I'm from Kentucky, it was a moderate temperate climate. We did get snow there. So I'm more of a winter person than I am more of a summer person. So I love my time in Maine and hope to stay here many years into retirement as well.
Well, I think that everyone, you know, should take some time to live their life in Maine. It's definitely my favorite place to be. Now, you're in the Kentucky area. That's where you grew up. And you went to UK, and I do want to talk about UK a little bit later in the segment. But prior to becoming the executive director at First Park, what were you doing from a professional standpoint when you were out in Arizona?
I was the executive director or president of a group called Access Arizona. And that was a regional economic development foundation located in the Interstate 10 corridor between Phoenix and Tucson. So again, that was business recruitment for Central Arizona, and working as well to retain and grow existing businesses there in the area. So the community of Casa Grande, the little town of Eloy, that was kind of the center of the area between Phoenix and Tucson that I worked out of. I lived actually in the Mesa Scottsdale area, so I had about a 1 hour commute. But the roads being what they were in Arizona, it was an easy, relaxing commute back and forth. So I lived actually up in the mountains, the Usury Mountains of Mesa, which is sort of the east side of Phoenix and Scottsdale, and had beautiful views, a very much natural setting, and just really cherished every day that I woke up to that sunrise and all, and saw the beautiful sunsets in Arizona. You know, one thing I always say, I've lived in Seattle, Phoenix, Chicago, now Maine, and elsewhere. But if I'm sad, if I actually get to the point where I cry at a closing, that means that the house really endeared itself to me. That particular home in Mesa, Arizona, it really got to me at the closing. So I miss it to this day.
Oh, that's great to hear. I mean, I think it's cool too to hear all these different locations. I mean, from a geographic standpoint, it sounds like your work and life has brought you across the United States.
it's given me a broader view of the country and regionalism, how people feel in different parts of the country. I have a better understanding and awareness, I think, from living coast to coast as I have.
And I think that's a really interesting point because, you know, today's topic, we're talking about location and how it interacts with diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives, specifically in choosing a location for a business to operate out of. But I think one of the great reasons why you are the perfect speaker for this is the breadth of places that you've lived throughout the country. As well as kind of your role at First Park. Can you explain to some of our listeners what First Park is and kind of what your mission is as executive director within the organization?
First Park is an offshoot of what's known as the Kennebec Regional Development Authority, which was established by the Maine legislature in 1998. So First Park is a 280-acre Commerce and Technology Center along Interstate 95 at the Oakland-Waterville exit, roughly between Augusta and, well, it's actually closer to Augusta than it would be to Bangor. But anyway, it's an improved park. We have high-speed internet, a foreign trade zone, municipal services such as water and sewer from the town of Oakland, and shovel-ready sites available with very minimal wait time for permitting and so forth. So we have all of our lots are pre-permitted, speaking of permitting, by the Maine Department of Environmental Protection. So when I say it's a shovel-ready commerce and technology park, it truly is. We have users in the park from as small as maybe a sole proprietorship, which is a medical doctor, to an 850 employee call center, which is T-Mobile at 133 First Park Drive here in Oakland. So we have a range from 1 to 850 employees in each of these buildings back here. Cumulatively, though, we have about 1,100 employees who work in First Park throughout all the businesses that are located here.
So 1,100 employees. I mean, I think that's going to become a big part of what our discussion is about, is those 1,100 employees, the employers who employ them, and how one might go about making a choice as to where to locate their business, and specifically focusing on DEI initiatives. And today I want to focus in on LGBTQ plus type discussion. I think that that's going to become apparent to our audience as we get going in the conversation. For those of you who are just joining us, however, you're listening to the HR Power Hour radio show. I'm Tani Alvarez, and today our guest is Jim Dinkle, Executive Director of the Kennebec Regional Development Authority and First Park in Oakland, Maine. And today we're discussing why location specifically matters when we're talking about DEI initiatives. You know, Jim, so 1,100 employees at issue within First Park, but First Park itself has only one other employee other than yourself, correct?
Correct.
How does DEI even get on your radar when, you know, you don't have 1,100 employees? You've got one employee who you're overseeing. How does this become a part of your day-to-day life?
Well, this is going to be a broad answer. Our largest employer, T-Mobile, has a very active LGBTQ employee organization here locally. They're supported very well from their corporate headquarters in Washington State. So we have that at play here in the park. Also, the Kennebec Regional Diversity Initiative has come into play as well. Our General Assembly, which is our governing board of First Park and the KRDA, will actually consider a resolution or a statement, I believe next Thursday night at our quarterly meeting, in support of this resolution supporting diversity and inclusion. That's a very broad statement that talks about everything from indigenous peoples in Maine to LGBTQ to other minorities and so forth. So it's fully represented. And it's a document that was drafted in large measure by Gary Bowman, who's the town manager of Oakland, as well as Dr. Phoenix Morningstar, who is the chairman, I guess you might say, of the board of the Kennebec Regional Diversity Initiative. And by the way, I would encourage your listeners to check out the Kennebec Regional Diversity Initiative, that's a mouthful, on Facebook. They have a very active page that's updated frequently. So, you know, there's a lot at play. There's, you know, with Colby College being located literally across Interstate 95 from the First Park campus, there's a good LGBTQ community and support staff there, as well as a large pride organization here in Central Maine as well. So one thing we're going to do probably, if there is a pride event this summer in Waterville, as there was a couple of years ago, there wasn't last year because of the pandemic, but First Park and the KRDA will have a booth at that event. So I said this was going to be a very broad answer. So let me just finish by saying that in my profession, which is probably best categorized as economic development, the site selectors, brokers, developers, others with interest, they ask as part of their checklist, do you have a diversity statement? Is there such an initiative in place? So that has become very common the last couple of years. So when I travel to places like Boston, New York, Chicago, Philadelphia, Dallas, and present First Park in Central Maine, I'm almost right off the bat asked that question. It's just a checklist, but it's at the top of the list. It makes a lot of sense when you think of a company like Apple, you know, Jeff or Mr. Cook, the head of Apple, being a member of the LGBT community, as I am. And, you know, again, so we have that sensitivity, and we put out the welcome mat for them, for that community, as well as anybody else that is interested in the in the First Park.
It's interesting because that kind of answered my next question, was going to be whether or not you were noticing the DEI, whether it was something that companies were focusing on. And it sounds like that is the case, that when site developers are coming or when people are considering looking at moving to First Park, this is something that they're asking about the park itself. Do you think that you've just listed a whole host of really interesting DEI initiatives that are based both from the college community, that are based from regional and governmental authority positions, and then just generally, you know, I hate using the term community because it's so broad, but geographic community and then the people within the community. Do you think one is pushing this movement? Is it the companies that are coming in that are bringing it to the forefront of employers' mind? Or is it really the people who are living in the community that are saying, this is important to us and this needs to be a priority for the businesses that we're bringing into the area as well?
I don't mean to waffle on that question, but I would say the answer is both. Certainly large multinational corporations such as T-Mobile, which I believe is owned by a German concern in Europe, certainly has a world view of diversity and inclusion because of its operations all over the globe. But, you know, again, locally with the mix of people we have with the colleges and other employers throughout Central Maine, that certainly contributes to it. I have found myself, since I've lived here now for 3 years, people here are much more open-minded than other places I've lived. And I would even include Seattle, which you think of as a very progressive place, and it is. But I find people here to be just equally as open-minded and welcoming as a community like Seattle would have been as well. But I would guesstimate that about a third of the prospects that I talk to ask about diversity and inclusion. Now, if I'm talking to a Fortune 500 company, I would say that 100% of those companies or their representatives ask about diversity and inclusion.
You know what? I will never hold it against someone when they say that their answer is a waffle, since as a lawyer, I'd say 90% of the time my answer is maybe. So when we're asking chicken and egg questions, when there's no answer, that's fine by me. With that, we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employer relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. Jobs in ME.com has been matching Maine employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on Jobs in ME to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit jobsinme.com. That's jobsinme.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
I'm so sick.
Ooh, honey.
Seriously? I'm sick.
Oh, honey, it's time for DayQuil Severe, honey. It's maximum strength cold and flu medicine with soothing, honeylicious taste.
I love you, honey.
And I love
you. I meant the DayQuil.
New DayQuil Severe Honey. The soothing, honeylicious daytime coughing, aching, stuffy head, fever, power through your day medicine. Use as directed.
At over 150 years old, Verrill has an illustrious history with more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill as one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact Verrill at verrill-law.com. That's verrill-law.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by cmacareer.com and verrill-law.com. I'm your host, Tani Alvarez, and today our guest is Jim Dinkle, Executive Director of the Kennebec Regional Development Authority, First Park, in Oakland, Maine. And today we're discussing why location matters in DEI initiatives. And prior to the break, if you've been listening, I asked Jim a tough question that had a maybe type of waffling answer about whether or not employers are leading the charge in these DEI initiatives, or whether we see it more community-based, and that's where the growth is coming from. I mean, Jim, returning kind of to that concept, as you know, most of our listeners today, they're business owners or leaders, or they work in human resources generally within their organization. If diversity, equity, and inclusion type questions aren't something that their organization is currently including in determining or picking physical locations, what are some questions that you think HR leaders could provide to their operations team that would help them to find a location or a business park that had that same DEI values as the company itself?
That's a great question. I have to tell you, the first time in my career that I remember diversity and inclusion coming up in economic development. And some people may find this surprising, but when I worked for BNSF Railway, which is America's second largest railroad, I worked for them in Chicago. I was the manager of five states in the Midwest for BNSF. And the Coors Company was doing a site selection, and they were looking at one of our parks near Joliet, Illinois, outside of Chicago. And I'll never forget, they really were drilling deep as far as information about diversity and inclusion. Now, that was, you know, over 15 years ago. And again, certainly I wasn't as well attuned. I mean, I knew from my personal experience what to say. But I have found the last 15 years that this has definitely gone to the top of the list, again, with these Fortune 500 corporations especially. You've asked a really good question. I think one thing that the Maine Municipal Association has done, which we are a member of at KRDA, First Park, is they've taught sensitivity training for everyone from police to clerks to other public officials to work, in this case, with minorities and with diverse, and to be more diverse and inclusive in their treatment of customers and clients that visit the public offices. I have found from my own experience, I would have given anything if I had been more versed, especially by my human resource department, as far as healthcare for my partner. We've been together 21 years, but 20 years ago, I wish I'd had more insight as far as, healthcare, establishing a trust, estate planning. And these are things that I think an HR department can get involved in as well for their LGBTQ, especially LGBTQ employees. It's a tricky navigation, I'll just put it that way, when you're LGBTQ. When I go to the doctor or the hospital, I literally take a document, my trust document, with me as proof that my partner, who will become my husband this year, that he, has power of attorney and so forth over me and has the legal right to visit me in the hospital and make decisions, medical decisions and so forth.
Well, first, congratulations. And second, I think that, talking about when you mentioned training and making sure that the operational team is trained, I think that's a really good point. And when we're talking about training, a lot of entities will do the state-required sexual harassment training, but taking that a little bit further and talking about microaggressions in the workplace and biases. And in a lot of situations, and you and I have had this discussion already, but an individual's life privileges, whatever that may be, whether it's the color of their skin, whether or not it's a sexual orientation that doesn't experience the same biases, those privileges are such that it does, in a lot of situations, lead decision makers to not, I don't want to say think through, but to recognize some of the challenges that other people in the community are experiencing because they're not their own challenges.
Yeah. The LGBTQ corporate index was released this week. I don't know if you saw the article in Maine Biz, but right at the top of that list, Hanford scores a perfect 100. And L.L. Bean is not far behind. They scored a 90. I'm wearing an L.L. Bean today, by the way. So I bring up that point because I tend, and Carlos, my partner as well, we tend to patronize LGBTQ-friendly or owned businesses. And a lot of other people are like us as well that have that spending power. And we pick and choose, who we spend our money with. And he was very fortunate. Carlos just finished working recently, eight or nine years, for American Express Corporation, a wonderful employer. And, diversity and inclusion was the name of the game there. And I felt so good and comfortable with him working for that employer. Now he works for a group called Dario, D-A-R-I-O, I believe, Health Systems, which is based in Israel. And again, diversity and inclusion is a standard with them as well. So in both of our careers, we've both chosen wisely, I think, where we've worked. And, I say chosen where we've worked because I think you need to really investigate. That should be part of your due diligence as an LGBTQ member, is to find out, about your potential employer, what programs and policies and so forth they have in place.
I think that's really helpful, for all of our listeners to understand, and probably something that you'd want to be, as a business owner, looking into as you're going and choosing a location. What are the other entities that are in this business park? What are their ratings from a DEI perspective? Is it something that's already on their radar? You indicated that you see on from site developers the question of whether or not the landlord or the business park itself has a DEI policy. Asking the landlord or the developer whether or not they're involved in events or organizations in the community that have a DEI focus, is that something that you've seen as well or had discussions about with tenants?
Not so much other than T-Mobile, maybe. Because as I said, that's a large corporate entity here in the park with a very active organization within. And but most of the other current ones I can't think of in general. I want to go back just a second, though, because, I had a fairly catastrophic illness back in the fall. And again, my LGBTQ status concerned me with my healthcare provider. Not my insurer, but I didn't know exactly where I stood with my hospital, the healthcare network, and what rights I had. And I'm still not sure about that. So see, that's something again that I think a human resource department can help with as a benefit. I would like to know more from my healthcare provider, because like I said, I carry that document with me. Well, when
absolutely.
I go to the doctor or the hospital, even in the car. But, that's a great concern to me, especially if you came to an end-of-life situation and you didn't want to be alone or without your most cherished, person in your life with you.
Absolutely. And it sounds like ways that, human resources can further show their commitment to DEI initiatives is through the education and providing other services to members of to their employees generally as to best practices as to some of these events and how their insurance will work in some of these situations, which may, depending on the circumstance, affect all of their employees in one way or another.
When I worked at BNSF, which is a Fortune 100 corporation, it's part of Berkshire Hathaway now, but they had a very broad definition of diversity and inclusion, which was very good, very healthy. But they had a diversity and inclusion day within the corporation that was devoted to all minorities and status employees within the corporation. So that's something that I think it would be good for employers to consider, especially HR, and ask your LGBTQ community members in this case what they would most benefit or be most interested in hearing about.
Absolutely. And when we're talking kind of about the different organizations who are focusing on these DEI initiatives, one of the things, you've mentioned some rating programs that are out there. You and I, before this show, however, also talked about the National LGBTQ Chamber of Commerce as being a good resource for people to talk to their employer about and to potentially join that organization to further show a commitment to LGBTQ plus community members. Are there other organizations as well that may be more state-specific or local that companies should be considering either joining or, if not joining, supporting in such a way that it can help to show their commitment to DEI from a more general standpoint? And when we're talking about, who we want our neighbors to be and the movement of people and communities drawing in organizations that are like-minded.
Well, here in Maine, I can't sing the praises loud enough of Equality Maine and the work that they do, especially in Augusta and around the state, as far as education and training and support that they give the LGBTQ community. Nationally, HRC, the Human Rights Campaign, is another standard really in the LGBT community. And they do a lot of great work with lobbying and again, education, training and support and outreach. Those are two particular organizations I can think of. at the University of Kentucky. I want to get a plug in for this shamelessly. But Carlos, my partner, we formed 3 years ago the Dinkle Moss LGBTQ Resource Center at the University of Kentucky, which is where I graduated from college. And the three foundations of that center and their at the UK Student Center are financial literacy, entrepreneurship, and leadership development. And those are three things that I saw a need for in the LGBT community in central Kentucky, but as well as, and again, nationally, where I've lived, that education and training in those three areas can greatly benefit members of our community as they start their own businesses, as they work their way up the corporate ladder, and just in their everyday lives.
Well, Jim, I promise I actually have a bunch more questions that I want to ask you about that. So, of course, you drop it at the end of a segment, which means we're going to pick it up in the next segment. Right now, though, we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM, WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employer relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
Car is a wreck and you don't know where to go.
Take it to Moody's.
You wanna get on with your life, get on with the show.
Take it to Moody's.
Good people you can trust and it won't be a fuss.
Take it to Moody's. Collision Centers.
M-O-O-D-Y. Your kid was talking on the cell phone, drove right through your own home. Sitting in the parking lot, maybe you get hit a lot. Driving through the green light, suddenly your side swipe. Put it in reverse, but it turned out that it was first.
Take it to Moody's. Take it to Moody's. Collision Centers.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. Jobs in ME.com has been matching Maine employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on Jobs and ME to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit jobsinme.com. That's jobsinme.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's JacksonLewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm your host, Tawny Alvarez, and today our guest is Jim Dinkle, Executive Director of the Kennebec Regional Development Authority, First Park in Oakland, Maine. And today we're discussing why location matters in DEI initiatives. And over the course of our conversation so far, we've had discussions about the community itself and how the community in which you operate plays a role in the success of your DEI initiatives, and specifically, you know, what drives DEI? Is it the community you live in? Is it yourself as a business and a business owner and the steps that you put towards it? And additionally, we've gotten some great insight from Jim personally, him personally opening up as to some of his experiences as a gay man and as a professional and some of the things that he in the past and presently would be looking for in from an HR team and from a DEI initiative generally. Jim, right before the break, you told all of our listeners about a resource center at the University of Kentucky that you and your partner started, the Dinkelmoss Suite for LGBTQ Resources. And you've indicated that there's kind of three pillars within the resource center of financial literacy, entrepreneurship, and leadership development. And you said that those were things that you felt were necessary. How did you decide that this was something that you needed to do and then focus in on those three pillars?
I was approached by the university, gosh, probably 5 years ago when the planning was underway to build a new, I think, $300 million student center there, but to have the LGBTQ resource center there. So we were invited to create an endowment, which we did. And you know, I felt part of the need for leadership development, especially. Kentucky's a very conservative state, but I had been student body president at Kentucky when I was there, and I'd been a voting member on its board of trustees one term too. So I felt a need to now come out as a gay man. I was not out when I was a student there or in the years after that. So I felt more comfortable coming out and serving as a mentor or as an example to others that, hey, it's okay, it's all right, that there's this support there, you know, for you. I've always been a believer, and I told the folks at UK this at the time, that, again, the LGBT community, our biggest weapon is in the pocketbook, how we spend our money, how we invest our money, and that, again, that's where we really need to develop our own businesses and that, you know, mirror our beliefs and our visions and principles. So, again, the center, as you said, concentrates on leadership development. I hope that the next generation of elected leaders in Kentucky, somebody will have come out of that resource center. But also entrepreneurship, people that can start their own businesses, and then leadership development, and then financial planning as well. So anyway, it's a lot to take in, but it's about a 3,500 square foot center, and I'm very proud of it. I'm perpetually doing fundraising for it. So that's why I'm shamelessly getting a plug in for it. But I love the work that the staff does there on it.
Now we're 3 years into the center. Tell me about some of your experiences so far. Have you had some graduates at this point in time? Have you had people who are considering operating businesses, or have you seen people who truly have changed their spending habits as a result of the work that the center is doing and the education that's being provided there about companies and their DEI initiatives and I would say then priorities, where they prioritize diversity in their corporate structure.
Well, it's probably too soon to cite any specific examples of people that have come out of the program or the center there at UK, especially the past year we've lost because of the pandemic. I will say that every December, except for this past year, there's a feast on equality that draws usually 1,000 to 1,200 people. And they're never at a loss of corporate sponsorships for that event, which, again, is very gratifying as well to see some of the corporate names that come out for that, law firms and businesses that are headquartered in central Kentucky and around that step up to the plate and sponsor that event.
When we're talking about financial literacy and the fact that this is something that the center itself focuses on, what are you looking for when you are spending your money, or when you are talking, you know, in the center, you have people talking in the center about these financial literacy issues? I mean, we talk about the movement of businesses to locations that have a DEI focus, that are on the same page culturally as yourself and as your business. What are some of the things that you're also going to be looking at when we're talking about just being a consumer, or a consumer of whether it's goods or services from this standpoint?
Yeah. Again, I'm going to speak probably from more of a personal standpoint, but I don't like to patronize and spend or patronize businesses or spend my hard-earned money with businesses that don't share my, again, my core values. You know, my grandfather Dinkle, I told you earlier, practiced law until he was 94 years old. And he used to always say, never mix religion and politics. So in this case, I try, people are best advised not to mix their politics with sexuality as well. My grandfather, again, my core values and principles probably are ingrained in me from him. I told you earlier, he practiced law until he was 94. He lived to be 97. At the time he died or stopped practicing law, he's the second oldest practicing attorney in the United States and the oldest practicing in Kentucky. When I say practicing, I mean he went to the office every day into his mid-90s.
I tell you what, you're not going to see me in the office in my mid-90s.
Well, if you love what you're doing, I think it's healthy. So I think it kept him alive a long time.
I will be lucky to find myself at that age. And if I am still practicing, then more power to me, I guess.
My grandfather was a funny person. He was a contemporary of a former governor in Kentucky who had been the baseball commissioner that admitted Jackie Robinson into the major leagues. And that governor's name was Albert Benjamin Happy Chandler. Happy was his nickname. Chandler had been the baseball commissioner, had been a U.S. senator, governor of Kentucky, but he was a very progressive man for his time back in the 40s and 50s and early 60s. My grandfather had gone to law school with him. They both graduated, I think, in 1917. They were fraternity brothers of one another. And again, even at a very early age in the 1960s and 1970s, what was right and what was wrong when it came to diversity and inclusion was instilled in me by my grandfather, the attorney from Catlettsburg, Kentucky.
I think that becomes a really good kind of part of the discussion, as the fact that there's some DEI aspects and initiatives that are ingrained, and that they're going to be based off of our own morals and belief systems, and some that I don't want to say are learned, but that are required in the community that people are operating within, and that in part with hope that it becomes more of a learned behavior and turns into the morals and beliefs of the employees. But understanding that when we're hiring employees, when we're bringing people on, the importance of them having the same morals and values as our organization.
I agree with you. You know, the LGBT community has made great strides the past several years. You look at the main House of Representatives, the Speaker of the House is an out LGBTQ member, wonderful person, Ryan Fecteau. You know, Pete Buttigieg recently was installed as Transportation Secretary, former mayor of
Yes, absolutely. But I think that it's also crazy to think that this is our first openly gay man who's in this position, one of the secretary's seats. I mean, yes, Biden's administration already is making history in a number of ways. But to think just about that fact from a representation standpoint, I think is important for people to recognize and understand that DEI does encompass age, race, gender, sexual preference, sexual orientation, sexual identification, and the fact that discussions of she, he, them, their appropriate pronouns, this isn't something that is now a leftist, ideal, or is it super liberal, but it's an expectation that people are looking for the places that they put their business, the places where they spend their money, for these to be at top of mind and to become very natural and ingrained in their business dealings.
You know, Tawny, Dr. Richard Florida, he's received some criticism recently for his research, But he did do a series of books back in the 90s and early 2000s on the creative class of people. And I thought he did a real good job in capturing a lot of demographic information about the LGBT community, but also how that's important to staffing and businesses, and again, promoting diversity and inclusion. And I think he opened a lot of people's eyes with that series of books that he wrote about the creative class.
I'm going to have to look into that. And for listeners who are also interested in learning more, it sounds like Jim would recommend looking into that further. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employer relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
Don't you love that feeling when you just nailed your look? When someone you barely even know comes up to you and says, "Oh, I love that outfit. Where did you get it?" That's how it feels to use Stitch Fix. They're a personal styling service. Tell them what you love, and they send great clothes for you to try on at home. Stitch Fix is simple. Sign up in just a few minutes. Tell them about the brands you love and the looks that make you feel great. Stitch Fix is convenient. Get everything delivered right to you, so you can try on new styles in the comfort of your own home. Stitch Fix is on your terms and priced to fit your budget. There's no subscription required, ever. Keep what you want and send back anything you don't. So, isn't it time you started nailing your look? Get started today at StitchFix.com. Stitch Fix, personal styling for women, men, and kids. Stitch Fix, personal styling for everybody.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis, as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at JacksonLewis.com. That's JacksonLewis.com.
Man, do I love card night. You ready, boys? You got a king?
Go, Fish Dad!
Oh, come on! This is WWE superstar Titus O'Neil. The smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Learn more at 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. Jobs in ME.com has been matching Maine employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on Jobs and ME to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit jobsandme.com. That's jobsandme.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by cmacareer.com and verrill-law.com. I'm your host, Tawny Alvarez, and today our guest is Jim Dinkle, Executive Director of the Kennebec Regional Development Authority, First Park, in Oakland, Maine. And today we're discussing why location matters in DEI initiatives. For those of you who have been listening throughout the program, you've heard some great information from Jim, both from a professional standpoint and from a personal standpoint, of the importance of understanding the community that you're entering and understanding that more and more consumers are looking into this and digging deeper to understand what the corporate commitment is to DEI initiatives and whether or not they're just using the language or they're really living by those standards. Jim, one of the things that you brought to my attention that I'd like to talk a little bit about as we wrap up is House Bill 5084 that was sent to the U.S. Senate and specifically regarding corporate governance and promoting the transparency of the composition of different corporate boards. Jim, do you see this as a local issue or just something that we're going to see from a federal standpoint? Or tell me how you see this interacting with DEI initiatives.
Yeah, I don't see that becoming as much of a local issue, though it may. You know, I'm gratified locally. I mentioned that Kennebec Regional Diversity Initiative resolution or statement that our Central Maine Growth Council, our Mid-Maine Chamber of Commerce, for example, both approve that unanimously. But when it comes to corporate governance, the purpose of that bill, my understanding, is not to necessarily mandate that you must have, you know, certain representations or status or classes for people to serve on the boards. But it does, I think, promote diversity and inclusion very strongly, and certainly becomes sort of a principle for corporate boards to follow in choosing their members that serve on their boards. Again, Tawny, it goes back to what I said earlier. When I choose where to spend my money or put my personal resources and investing and so forth, I look for LGBTQ-friendly businesses. And one way that businesses can, you know, show that is, again, putting LGBTQ members in leadership positions on their corporate boards and through governance.
I think that's a really good point that you make. I know we've seen, you know, changes in the legislature in California requiring a certain percentage of the board to be identifying as female or female, and looking at it from other DEI initiatives is really important as well. Jim, this has been a wonderful discussion. I appreciate you taking time to come on the show and talk to me about your experiences.
Thank you. I've enjoyed being with you and I appreciate your questions.
You've been listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. Thanks for listening and we'll see you next week. Stay tuned for the HR Tip of the Week.
And now your HR Tip of the Week. Your HR Tip of the Week is being sponsored by Verrill.
Hi, I'm Liz Johnston from Verrill. When is the last time you reviewed your company's anti-harassment policies? What about the last time your employees and managers were trained on your policies? If it's been a while, this tip is for you. These days, news of a workplace incident can spread like wildfire, so it's important to maintain policies and a culture to discourage potentially damaging behavior among employees. Review your employee handbook to ensure that it contains policies prohibiting not only sexual harassment, but also other types of harassment based on protected traits under federal, state, and local law. Once your policy is in place, a training session is a great way to remind your employees of your company's values, open door policy, prohibition on harassment, and procedures for handling and making complaints. Separate trainings for supervisors and managers is also important so that members of management understand what to do if they become aware of a complaint or an incident. If you have any questions about anti-harassment policies, or how to handle issues regarding harassment, please contact me or any member of Verrill's Employment and Labor Team.
And that's your HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by Verrill. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at hrpowerhour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.